previously on uncharted territory.
When I looked back at where the rest of the mutated scientist's body was, it was all still. But the achievement said he was dead. It was probably better to play it safe than sorry. Mimic, all those parts on the floor are yours to snack on, I said. Mimic got to work, with a bit more energy than usual in its hops.
This is episode 9. Another NPC.
Fortunately, the smoke didn't linger for too long. I still wasn't sure how to guess how realistic things would be. Smoke from torches inside the house weren't an issue. Smoke from fires outside could be an issue. But I wasn't sure how long it lasted for. It didn't seem like there was any specific time for it, and it dissipated somewhat naturally, but at an accelerated rate. The same applied to the smoke that was in the hall and room. It might have been safe even if we were never blocked off from it, given how quickly it dissipated. But then again, I didn't know if we could inhale a dangerous amount of it before it went away, even at its faster-than-natural rate. How much smoke could a human safely handle? Ninja wasn't even technically a human, so was there a different amount she could handle? What about Mimic?
Lord Player?
Ninja asked, snapping me out of my thoughts. When I looked at her, her mask was pulled down and her hood was lowered. Yeah? I asked in response.
Is everything all right? Or were you lost in thought again?
I was thinking about smoke.
About smoke?
Would you say that you can handle being in smoke for a decent amount of time? Or is it dangerous for you?
Oh, smoke is no concern for me. It may sting the eyes, but I am more than capable of looking through the pain and holding my breath until I'm in a safer location to breathe again.
It always came back to her and her breathing techniques. Makes sense. In that case, I was the only one who really needed to worry about smoke. Probably. But, that aside, I looked over at the pod with the frozen woman inside of it. The biggest threat in the mini-dungeon was already dealt with, so all that was left was to explore the rest of it and then pull the scientist out from her frozen stasis. I was tempted to get her out of there as soon as possible, but that probably wasn't the best idea. If we got her out right away, we'd probably have to escort her back to the house. And now that the main threat of the dungeon was dealt with, and now that I had a chainsaw, it was smarter to go and explore the rest of it before freeing her. Let's finish exploring the dungeon, I said to Ninja and Mimic. After that big guy, I don't think anything else in here can give us a challenge. Especially not while I had a chainsaw that was even stronger than it was supposed to be.
Understood, my lord,
Ninja replied. Mimic saluted me with its tongue to show me that it understood as well. I looked back at the frozen scientist. We'll be back for you in a bit. Stay put. Sure, she couldn't hear me, probably, but I still felt like saying that. All right, let's see if we can get some more loot. Even though zombies kept on spawning, trying to kill us, it felt pathetically easy to deal with them after the earlier drama of dealing with a horde of zombies combined with a giant one who tried to be immortal. Ninja and Mimic were eager to carry me, too, after I ended up finishing off the big guy and the horde on my own with the chainsaw. That was all right, though. Them protecting me so eagerly meant I had an easy time building some stairs and bridges to make up for all the holes I created with my bombs. Once we were back up on the first floor, I went and grabbed those security turrets, since I wanted them on hand in case anything bad happened again. Plus, they'd be helpful when it came to the mini-event to wake up the frozen scientist. But once I had those back in my inventory, we explored some of the other passages and rooms. Most led to empty, dead ends, since it was just a mini-dungeon, but we did eventually come across another chest that featured one of the dungeon's unique accessories. Stabilized Virus Injector. Accessory. +5% damage. plus 2.5% movement speed. May turn the skin slightly green. It was a pretty good accessory, though the main appeal came from the movement speed, since I didn't have a more reliable boost for that yet. In my humble opinion, in the original game, movement speed was king. It made dodging attacks so much easier when you could easily just run or jump out of the way. And if you dodged attacks, you stayed alive for longer, you dealt more damage, and you killed any enemy who faced you. But, unfortunately, the accessory had a downside. I wasn't in a game, so when I equipped it, it showed up on my real body, and it showed up as a tube full of green fluid strapped to my right bicep, with a needle injecting it into my veins. It also, as the description warned, turned my skin slightly green to look more like a zombie. Seeing that on an avatar in a game was one thing. Seeing it on my real body was another, far more uncomfortable thing. Fortunately, while I might not have been in a game, I was in a world that behaved like one, so all I had to do was set the accessory to not be visible. The tube, needle, and green tint all disappeared as soon as I set them to hidden, but I retained the damage and movement speed buffs. I also got a couple more bombs from the chest. I liked bombs. So, that was two chests down. There were potentially two more still. There was always a minimum of two and a maximum of four per mini-dungeon. I felt like we explored most of it already, though, so I didn't have much faith in us finding another two. Maybe one more, but not two.
Lord Player!
Ninja shouted. She went ahead and explored the next couple of rooms while I looted the chest, so I went out to check on her. And when I found her, I saw her standing next to a sight that was just as good as another chest. It was another crystallized heart, with equally crystallized blood connected to it, spreading out across the ground.
What is this?
Ninja asked me.
It appears to be a giant heart, yet it is made of some form of crystal?
Watch carefully, I said. I want to see if you can see what's about to happen.
My lord?
Long explanation short, last time I found one of these, I absorbed an ancient warrior's soul and grew stronger from it.
Oh, as expected of one as impressive as you.
Thank you for the unearned praise, but yeah, pay attention. Mimic wasn't able to see anything the last time this happened, so I'm curious if you'll see anything.
Understood. I am ready and watching.
I nodded to Ninja before taking a deep breath and staring at the heart. The last time I found one, while I did grow stronger and basically absorb a soul from it, I first relived somebody's life. A speedrun of their life, sure, but still, I experienced their life, their emotions, and their ultimate downfall. I wasn't sure if I could expect that exact same setup again, and there was only one way to find out. I approached the heart. Just like before, it began to pulse with life, and red streams of blood-like energy connected it to me. My vision went black, only to return a second later. It happened again. I found myself skipping around the memories. The life of somebody who lived in a time long before my own. But unlike the last time, it was not the life of a Mesopotamian hero king that I saw. Instead, the life belonged to somebody who lived in an advanced underwater civilization, impossible not to compare to Atlantis. Sitting along the bottom of the ocean, incorporating glowing corals into the architecture, was a collection of domes and towers making up a beautiful city unlike anything I had ever seen before. The people walked around via glass tunnels whenever they weren't wearing breathing apparatuses to swim through the water. And then there were all of the private submarines speeding through the water as well. The people walking around wore clothes that reminded me of Roman fashion, but one mixed with a sort of sci-fi aesthetic I would expect to see in futuristic movies. But the scenery was not the focus of what I was seeing. The girl was. A classroom. A dozen children were packed together in one room, where an educator stood at the front, teaching them about the dangers of the ocean and how to avoid them. I was able to feel exactly what the focus of the visions felt. The urge to explore. A young girl who couldn't have been older than 10, with long, curly hair that matched the dark complexion of her skin, watched out the window with eyes full of wonder. And, as the memories would go on to show, she was to become one of the greatest explorers to ever live. The girl, now an adult, braved the darkest, deepest depths of the ocean to chart its farthest reaches. She helped those in need, narrowly escaped massive leviathans trying to swallow her personal submarine whole, and made scientific discoveries that earned her endless praise and accolades. And yet, just like with the Hero King whose past I saw, she was doomed to failure. I saw them again, the robed figures who looked similar to the entities. They watched as she was forced to make a decision that came down to sacrificing herself and the life of her child with her, or the civilization she loved so dearly that was everything she knew. Even ancient underwater civilizations weren't spared from acts of terrorism. In a city with growing divide between the different classes, somebody decided it would be better to make sure they all lost, rather than allow the other side to win. The pain and conflict she felt became my own. There was only enough time to escape with her child, or to stay behind and save the lives of countless more. Nobody but her could do it. I didn't get the whole story. I only saw glimpses of it. I wasn't sure how she ended up in that situation, nor how she could have saved them, but I could feel the panic and turmoil she felt. For the first time in her life, she was paralyzed and had no idea what to choose. No matter how much she loved her child, it was impossible for her to condemn countless others to death. But at the same time, it was impossible for her to choose the majority over her own child. Her vision, my vision, then filled with an intense white light. And then there was nothing.
How was I supposed to choose?
The woman asked, as I found myself back in the chamber where I found the heart. The explorer, whose memories and last moments I just experienced, now stood before me, a solemn expression worn on her face.
Why did it have to be me?
I had no idea what to say. Having felt everything she did, I wanted to try and comfort her however I could, but nothing came to mind. By making no choice, she experienced the worst outcome, losing not only her child, but her civilization as well. Her spirit, if it could be called that, was already fading away as she looked me in the eyes to say,
"Do not make the same mistake as me. No matter how hard the choice may be, struggle until the end, and do not fall victim to indecisiveness. Let not the fear of loss paralyze your mind."
With most of her spirit having faded away already, she reached one hand forward and rested it against my cheek.
"At least humanity has survived."
The last part of her spirit to vanish was a faded smile. Defier's heart added to inventory.
My lord?
Ninja asked.
What's wrong? You're crying.
I reached my hand up to my cheek where it was touched and felt a tear on it. You didn't see or hear any of that, did you? I asked. Ninja blinked a couple of times and asked,
Hear or see what? All I saw was you approach the heart, and then it disappeared.
It was just like before then, when Mimic didn't witness any of my experience with the king. I'll explain it later. For now, I paused and looked at Ninja. I couldn't resist. I threw my arms around her and tightly hugged her against me.
My lord?
Ninja gasped out. Just let me stay like this for a minute, all right? Even though it wasn't my child and civilization that I lost, I still felt all the pain that explorer of old felt. Ninja might not have understood what was going on, but she still wrapped her arms around me in return.
We may stay like this for as long as you desire, my lord,
she said, her voice more quiet and gentler in tone than usual. It didn't help that, on top of the residual emotions I felt, I also couldn't choose between those two options. My child or my society? The life of the one I cared about most or the lives of millions of people? If I was ever forced to make a decision like that, I had no idea what I would choose. And that scared me. Defier's Heart. The heart of a challenger who failed to ascend. Even so, their desire to survive has lived on and may be used to empower future challengers. Consuming this item will grant you a permanent plus 25 health, plus 1 defense, and plus 1 damage. It was just like the first one. I wasn't sure if the description was just flavor text or not, but if it wasn't, then both the king and the explorer were both challengers who failed to ascend, and now their souls were used to empower future challengers. Me. I wanted to question how I ended up being a challenger when the previous challengers were warrior kings and famous explorers, while I was just some guy who worked a minimum wage job and played video games. Nepotism was what Dungeon Master told me. He said it was because of my ancestors. So then, did that mean I was related to one of the challengers? But depending on how far back that went, wouldn't there be thousands of descendants? So why me? Just having the same blood shouldn't have been enough, since there were probably countless people who had that blood in their veins too. I didn't know. But I used the heart regardless. I wasn't going to turn down more health, defense, and damage. All that was left was to explore the last chunk of the mini-dungeon and...
Oh? I am still here? Interesting.
The woman, the explorer from before, said,
It seems I'm not alone in here anymore, the warrior king replied.
Oh, I even have company. Rather interesting-looking company at that.
Wait, they could see each other? And were they seriously having a conversation in my head? Were they even in my head? Were they in my soul rather than my head? Was I going insane to not only have two distinct voices in my head, but to hear them talking to each other?
Come this way, the warrior king said. Let us leave this forefront. He has enough to contemplate without hearing us.
All right,
the explorer replied.
I am still not entirely sure what is going on, but...
The conversation ended there.
My lord?
Ninja asked, standing right in front of me and looking into my eyes.
Is everything well?
I might be going crazy. Or, actually, I don't think I'm crazy, but I think I'm learning what it's like to go crazy. I explained.
I am not sure I follow.
Don't worry. That just means you're as confused as I am. I'd try explaining it to her later. For now, I wanted to finish up exploring the rest of the mini-dungeon, and then head back to where the frozen scientist was. Exploring the rest of the dungeon went smoothly. There wasn't much else to loot, and I was even more confident after getting that accessory and heart. Plus, I had an inventory full of zombie gons from all the zombies we killed, so the dungeon was essentially defeated already. It couldn't pose a challenge to us anymore, as long as we were even slightly careful. All we had to do was go around and look for the last chests, if there even were any more. And it turned out that there was. There was one more chest, bringing us up to a total of 3. And inside of the chest was a duplicate. It was another chainsaw. To be fair, that was fine. Making the failed experiments ego required a chainsaw anyways, so if I didn't find a dupe, then I was going to have to use my original chainsaw to create it, and I didn't really want to do that. The chainsaw was too awesome. But still, it was a little disappointing to get a duplicate when I barely had any of the items from the dungeon's chests. A duplicate here and there was to be expected when trying to finish the set, but not when just starting with it. But since I had 2 chainsaws, I tried to wield both at once. Unfortunately, the world didn't let me. I could essentially only wield 1 item on my hotbar at a time. I physically wasn't allowed to grab onto another item on my hotbar while I was already wielding something else. No dual-wielding chainsaws for me. Though, what if I cut my arms off and had the chainsaws attached to my arms? That wouldn't technically be holding them, so could that work?
Lord Player?
Ninja said.
Your face carries a worrisome expression again.
I'm thinking about what it'd be like to have chainsaw arms, like some kind of... chainsaw man. I answered.
I see, but... if you were to do that, your hands would no longer be able to hold mine, nor be able to pet my... I mean, they would no longer be able to hold Lady Guide. I believe she would be very upset if that happened.
You know you can be selfish and admit you want me to pet your head so I'm not allowed to have chainsaw arms, right? Ninja blushed a bit and looked away.
But to admit something so shameless...
Her head was clearly in need of receiving some attention, so I reached forward and gave it a few pats. Good girl, Ninja. And don't worry, I won't replace my arms with chainsaws. Ninja's tail wagged and her ears wiggled between the petting and what I said. All right, let's get back to where we left the scientist, I said. We've kept her waiting long enough, and I don't think there's anything else in here for us to loot.
Understood,
Ninja replied. Her voice full of energy. She'd started to sound just the slightest bit tired before, but after receiving some spoiling from my hand, she was back to her usual energetic self. We're back, I said, as we walked into the room with the frozen scientist.
I'm not sure she can hear you, my lord,
Ninja said. I know, I'm just being friendly.
Oh, I see. Your kindness knows no bounds, my lord, to deliver such a kind greeting even to one who you know is unable to receive it.
Ninja was extremely easy to impress. That aside, I set down the turrets at each corner of the front room, facing all the sealed pods.
What now, my lord?
Ninja asked. Now, I said, and looked over at a control console against the right side of the room. I click some buttons on there and start the event. Those other pods will open up and let out the test subjects inside of them. Basically, just more zombies. And then we kill them, and that'll be that.
A simple task. There are only a few other containers, and we have dealt with far greater numbers.
Don't underestimate them. The zombies inside might just be the same types of zombies we've been fighting already. but they're gonna be buffed up. They'll be a bit faster, do more damage, and have more health. But we should still be able to handle them pretty easily. That was the smart thing to say, anyways. But in reality, the zombies were probably going to be pretty easy to deal with, thanks to the chainsaw. Even in the original game, they weren't a problem unless you were a new, totally unsuspecting player. The event felt more like baby's first wave defense, if anything, except there were only two waves, and each one was easily dealt with. "Ready?" I asked. Ninja and Mimic both nodded, the former nodding her head, and the latter nodding its body. I went over to the control panel and looked around for anything that I should have pressed. In the game, it was as simple as walking up to the panel and clicking the interaction key. I couldn't just press a designated key to make things work in this world, though, so I had to actually look for something to press. But there were a bunch of buttons. After a few moments, I noticed a lever off to the side that had a dusty plate underneath it. Dusting the plate off revealed the words, "Emergency Release," and that sounded close to what would be happening. So, I went with it. I pulled the lever. The first two pods came to life with mechanical noises. Some sort of gas sprayed out from some broken pipes. The zombies inside started to thaw out, and Ninja's ears adorably twitched in response to all the noises. Watching Ninja's ears was something I would never get tired of. But it wasn't something I could give all my attention to, because the front of those pods popped open and allowed the zombies to climb out. And the zombies looked a bit different than I expected them to, now that they weren't frozen and covered in ice. They looked like regular zombies, except for the fact that their arms and legs looked pumped full of steroids, and there were bulging black veins all across their body, and their eyes glowed red, because what better way to signify a strong enemy than by making their eyes glow red? But before the zombies could even get out from their pods, the turrets already fired their first shots, punching a hole straight through each of their chests. Unfortunately, that didn't kill them, but Ninja and Mimic were prepared to finish them off. Ninja, with a single swing, slashed one of the zombies in half. Mimic, meanwhile, slammed its body into the chest of the other zombie, crushing it back into the pod it was trying to climb out of. Both zombies died after that. I think I overestimated them, I said. Then again, I only ever really played solo, so maybe I just never realized how infantile this event would be with a group.
An easy battle is preferable,
Ninja said.
It is best to have overwhelming victory.
You're not wrong. Four more pods began to open up. Just like before, the turrets opened fire on the first zombies in their sight, and Mimic and Ninja finished them off. That left two more zombies. I'll get these two, I said, as I revved up the chainsaw. Oh, it felt so good to do that. And maybe it was me being a bit overconfident, but I waited for the zombies to climb out from their pods before going after the nearest one with my chainsaw. I didn't want to finish them off before they even got to climb out. The zombie I went for saw me coming for it and swung its clawed hand at me. But even its enhanced movements were still too slow when compared to the sparring I did with Ninja. Dodging out of the way was easy, and following up by sawing its arm off was even easier. Multiple damage numbers popped up just in the half a second it took to saw off its arm, too. It couldn't have had much health left after that, so I ducked underneath its next attack and thrust my chainsaw straight into its gut. Doing no knockback damage could be a problem sometimes, but not when I wanted an enemy to stay stuck on my weapon to eat a growing amount of damage. The zombie exploded with gore upon its death, leaving just one more zombie that the turrets already both shot. I intercepted its swing at me by blocking its arm with my chainsaw, but all that did was allow the zombie to kill itself against me. It got its arm stuck in my chainsaw, which allowed it to overwhelm it with damage ticks, and those damage ticks killed it within a second. A chainsaw was potentially extremely broken in a world like this. That made me love it even more. Chainsaws and flamethrowers. Did a man really need anything else in life?
You have improved, Lord Player,
Ninja said. Have I? Could you even tell from how quickly that was over? I asked.
I could. Though the battle may have been over quickly, your movements have grown more refined since we practiced. It is impressive just how quickly you have improved your skill.
Well, I think this world might be responsible for that. But I've also got some help in me. Ninja tilted her head to the side a bit.
I am not sure I understand.
That can be explained later, too. For now, I paused and looked at the final pod. The event was already over. The zombies were dead. It was a lot more anticlimactic than I thought it would be, but I must have been stressed out from earlier when I was worried about it being worse. And now, the final pod began to open up. I noticed the woman inside didn't wake up yet, though. Or, at least, didn't seem to be awake. And she was about to be dropped without any support as soon as the pod opened up. So, I ran up to the pod, and as soon as it opened, reached my arms out to grab the woman as she fell. Her body was freezing to the touch still. I pushed some of her purple hair away from her face to get a look at her, and I saw that her eyes were still closed. Her lips were slightly parted and breathing, though, which was a good sign. Guess she still needs some time, I said. I'll carry—
Lord Player,
Ninja said, her voice more serious again.
The rabble approach once more.
I looked at what she was talking about, and, surely enough, there was another whole horde of zombies outside the room coming down the hall. I never want to see a zombie again after this, I said, lowering the thawed scientist onto the ground. At least there weren't any copies of the wannabe immortal zombie from earlier. All right, Ninja, Mimic, I said. Let's cut down this crowd. Then we can finally get out of here. I could only assume that the horde was triggered by the event as a sort of surprise, which wasn't supposed to happen. Or somebody else decided to trigger it just for fun. There was no reason for it to appear on its own like that, so it had to be one of those. Probably. Everything I could guess about the world was just that. A guess. I stepped forward with my chainsaw in my hand and—
Concerned confusion.
A new, feminine voice said from behind me. I turned around and saw the scientist leaning up on one arm with her eyes open as her free hand dug into her coat pocket to pull out a pair of glasses. I could only assume by what she said that she was concerned and confused, though that was a weird way of putting it if she was. Regardless, I told her, I know this is probably confusing and makes no sense, but we have to kill a bunch of zombies, and then I'll explain everything to you.
Apprehensive nod,
the woman replied, without actually nodding. She was kind of strange. But Ninja and Mimic were already about to meet the zombie horde, so I rushed over to join them and got to work. One zombie horde later, and we were covered in blood and gore once again. Looks like that's the last of them, I said.
Your new weapon is truly impressive, my lord,
Ninja added on.
It cut through them so effortlessly.
Yeah, well, all I have to do is hold the trigger, and it pretty much does all the work for me. I then turned around to look back into the room where the scientist was. She was up on her feet now, and she looked like she was going around the room analyzing the condition of everything in there, I would have thought she'd be more, well, distracted by the fact that we were fighting a bunch of zombies. But she looked more concerned about the lab equipment instead. Hey! I called out to her. It's safe now.
Surprised gasp,
the woman replied. Surprised gasp?
Yes. You called out to me when I was not expecting it, so it surprised me.
Oh, good. She was capable of talking in proper sentences. You don't seem that surprised.
I am very surprised, as well as very confused. There is much happening that makes zero sense.
Now that the situation calmed down and she was standing up, I got a better look at her. For a scientific-looking lady, who I could only assume once worked in the lab, just like the mutated scientist, she was dressed pretty... well, maybe not provocatively, but definitely interesting. She had a stereotypical white lab coat, but she wore it off her shoulders to a degree where it had to be on purpose. Then she had a turtleneck sweater on underneath that, but it didn't have any sleeves, and also had a hole over her chest designed specifically to show off cleavage, and she had a lot of that. Then she had a black collar on around the neck part of her sweater, and her jacket's sleeves were long enough that her hands were completely covered up by them. She had more collars around each sleeve, near where the wrist would go, as if to tie the sleeves off and keep her hands stuck inside, rather than sticking out. Aside from that, she wore a pretty simple skirt and pantyhose. But then she also had tall, black boots on. She was a pretty interesting-looking woman. Honestly, between her, Guide, and Ninja, she somehow looked the most like a fictional NPC from a game out of all of them, and Guide was literally designed to be one. And Ninja was, well, a ninja. But the human scientist girl looked more dramatic than both of them. She didn't look anything like the NPC in the game did, either. The NPC acquired from this event in the game was basically just a normal girl with a lab coat and a brown ponytail. She looked extremely plain compared to the woman standing in front of me.
Smug pride,
the woman said, snapping me out of my thoughts. Smug pride? I asked her.
It is obvious that you are looking at my body, and your expression makes it clear that your initial reaction is not a negative one. That is why I feel an emotion best described as smug pride.
Right. Well... she called me out, and I couldn't help but to feel awkward after that. I was probably checking her body out more than I should have been, given the situation. I'd blame it on adrenaline from all the fighting. I also looked over at Ninja, and saw her staring down at her own chest while holding her hands in front of it. Thinking about it, I actually hadn't seen her naked chest before. Sure, she took off her clothes, but she still kept on that cloth binding around it for some reason. Was she self-conscious? I didn't know. That was something else that could be found out later, since it probably wasn't appropriate to ask that sort of thing when around somebody new. Let's not waste any time here, I said. I'll explain everything on the way back to the house, but it's dangerous to stay in here.
Confirming nod,
the new woman said.
I will accompany you.
And so, we gained another NPC.
Thank you for joining us on another thrilling adventure of Uncharted Territory. The excitement, danger, and magic of Uncharted Territory continues to unfold, and we can't wait to share what's in store for our next episode. So, mark your calendars, because next Friday, we'll dive back into the game world for more action, mystery, and unexpected twists. Before we part ways, remember that your feedback and support keep this journey alive. If you have any questions, comments, or fan theories, tweet at us at UTPod-. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep exploring.